Hello. My name is Kunal, and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank this meeting for the opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. It really is an honor to be here. I was asked several months ago, which is horrible, because I've had months to, like, plan this. I had an exam I was studying for, and I was like, no, I can't do it. And then I was like, I have a hard enough time being serious, like, without a microphone. And now it's like there's a microphone here, and I can say anything for the next 25 minutes, and you poor people have to take it. I could talk about Andrew Jackson and the Seven Years' War, and there'd be, like, one person, I'd see them, and they're sitting there, like, nodding, trying to relate. And then there's the AA spiritual nod where you sit, and you kind of close your eyes, and you're like, But it's really cool to be here. And just out of curiosity, who's in their first year? Wow. First 2 years. Keep them up. There's fewer people. Come on, first 2 years. Okay, cool. I want to let you guys know that, you know, if you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, you're definitely the most important people in this room. And one of the most important things that has been part of me staying sober has been working with newcomers and getting to watch people come in and watch them go through struggles that I relate to, struggles I don't relate to, and get to the other side and then have that experience so they can transfer it to someone else. I come from a pretty interesting background. To me, at least. My parents, you know, they came over from India, so I'm, like, the first person born in the U.S. in, like, my entire bloodline, which dates back several hundred years, I'm sure. I have two parents, and they came over here, and they grew up in a completely different world with a totally different culture. And my father came here in the 80s, and just, he had like $700, he landed in New York City, got mugged in Newark 2 weeks later, but worked really, really hard to, like, make it here. And then he went back, arranged marriage with mother, they came here, she just left home to go 10,000 miles away, and then I was born. And, growing up, it's like, my parents, they gave me everything I could really want. You know what I mean? And they gave me love, and they did the best that they could. But there was stuff that happened growing up that I just started to develop the wrong tools. There's a lot of physical abuse, verbal abuse that happened growing up. And that was something that, you know, as a kid, you don't really know how to handle that. And I am no exception. And, going forward past that, I learned there was stuff going on at home, but I learned, okay, don't talk about it. Don't talk about it at all. And then it was kind of this, like, we're your family, we want you to be happy, so just, like, always be happy. And I was thinking about it earlier, and I was like, you're either a total normie, but I don't even think you're normal. I think you're crazy if you can do those two things, where you don't talk about anything with anyone, and you're just always happy. And it just doesn't make sense to me. And, you know, I went to a good school, but again, it's like I felt very different because it's like the people I grew up with, they had these interests and these things that they did, and it was just all a totally foreign concept to me. Most kids, they kind of got signed up to play sports, and I kind of had to discover that was like something you could do and then, like, bring it home and be like, I'd like to try this. They're like, okay, cool. But it was great. You know, I grew up with a great community, and I had a really good education growing up, and whatever I wanted to do, I got support for it. You know, if I wanted to learn how to play the guitar, my dad took me out and bought me a guitar. If I wanted to learn how to play hockey, my parents would commit to waking up at 6 a.m. to drive me to hockey practice, and then not flip out when I, like, forgot my skates, which has happened. I went to a really small school. It was 50 kids graduating in eighth grade, and a lot of them went to the same high school as me, and I went to an all-guys high school. And when I got there, it went from being really small to really big. My entering class was like 350 kids. And I just didn't know how to deal with it, right? Because from the time I was about 9 years old, I just have this horrible anxiety. This just, it just beats on me constantly. If I'm in a group of people, it's just really bad. And I've gotten to grow past that and, like, do a lot of work on that here. But it was something that stayed with me at that point. And I always wanted to fit in. I'm a huge people pleaser, right? I'll just be whoever you want, right? Just to fit in. It doesn't matter. It's really funny. And, you know, I got to high school and it was like suddenly all the kids that were really cool, they're drinking and they're using drugs and they're just kind of training themselves to like go pledge a fraternity at like a state school somewhere. It was called Brophy and it's an all guys school. And you know, I wanted to do that. So it's like the first time I took a drink, I was just a decision to get drunk. It wasn't necessarily, oh, like, I'm going to, like, try this and, like, sip it or, like, smell it at first, like, put it on my skin and, you know. It was just a decision to get drunk, and it was a birthday party, and like any high roller, my dad dropped me off there. And I go in, and we start, you know, drinking, you know, beer first, and then my friend finally arrives with the alcohol, and I'm like, this is awesome. And we start taking shots, and for the first time, I had found something that removed that anxiety that was just constantly beating on me, and you know the insecurities and all the things that I had suddenly vanished, and I had found something where I was being funny and I was being confident, and I went up and like talked to this girl that I'd had a crush on all year, and I was just, like, acting, I was like, hey, what's up, and you know, we, like, that's going well, and then we go up to the guest house, and, you know, we start making out, and about 2 minutes later, I throw up, like, all over the floor, I run away, and, you know, grab my friend, I'm like, we got a code red, which was a code I had just made up, and he drove me home, I went home, I puked more. My dad comes up. He's like, what's up? I just had bad pizza. And I went to bed. And, you know, the next Monday when I went to school, I had that look from people like, oh, that guy was at the party. And that meant the world to me, right? Because suddenly it's like there's this group that I brand as cool. And now I've entered it because of the behaviors I've chosen to take on in order to assimilate myself, right? It's normal human behavior. And, that's how it started off, and it was fun at first, right? It was, like, fun. I, like, tried pot later, and, you know, drugs are a huge part of my story. I don't believe I would have come into the program and started this journey of recovery if I hadn't done drugs, as early as I did, at least. And, you know, started doing drugs, started smoking pot. That was cool. I realized that getting a fake ID makes you, like, the best person to have as a friend in high school. So I do that, so now I can get alcohol. So now I'm like turning down parties to go to, and you know, I'm buying alcohol for kids at school just to fit in. But like Bill says, when he's writing a story, drink starts to take on an exciting and important part of my life. It becomes kind of a regular thing. And it starts off as weekends, you know, which counts as Friday, Saturday, and then evolves into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and then evolves into Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and every day during school breaks. And, you know, it started to just open up this world where I'm hanging out with people, and it starts to become a more common thing that I do. And suddenly, you know, I extend the boundaries that I initially set for myself with respect to it. And, you know, I could tell you a ton of, like, cool war stories or whatever, but that's not really why we're here. And but the bottom line was, you know, I went from being someone who could do it once in a while, say no to it, to being someone who couldn't live without it. And what ended up happening is that I got into a great school. I got a full scholarship to go there because I had a good resume in high school. And I told myself, if I can keep this up, then I can do whatever I want. That's kind of my reward system. As long as things are good on paper, we're cool. And I did a lot of dumb things. I drove drunk I don't know how many times. I started doing hard drugs at school and, you know, helping other people to find them and, like, experiment with them, and started to get into hallucinogens pretty heavily. And then I went to college, and everything I'd done up until this point in my life, it was like, all right, I'm here, you know? There's no structure. There's no parents I have to argue with or make them cry because I lied to them another time. There's none of that. And I can do what I want. And everything I had done up until that point in my life, even the, you know, service opportunities or volunteer efforts or starting a water project to, you know, raise money to have, you know, clean water delivered to villages in El Salvador, all of it was just, it was bullshit. It was just for the point of getting what I wanted. And it's something it took me a while to kind of learn and see in myself. But I got to college and, you know, I basically just burned out over like 14 to 16 months, you know. Like I said, I started playing around with hard drugs pretty regularly, and college was an environment where I could do that whenever I wanted, wherever I wanted. Started selling drugs because, you know, no one really gives a shit if you can get alcohol in college. And it just got really bad, man, really bad. I started hanging out with shittier and shittier people and shittier places. Sorry, pardon my language. With, you know, doing the same thing, you know, crystal meth, ecstasy, raving, ketamine, cat tranquilizers, you know, doing pills every day, cocaine, OxyContin, and it just became a mess where I was just every day it was kind of, all right, well, I did that yesterday, so today I'll try this combination. And then, you know, that starts to work for a while, but then I start getting dope sick, so I thought, all right, well, I'll start doing uppers a little more, but then I start getting really neurotic, and it just became a roller coaster where I was effectively chasing that feeling I got the first time I got drunk, and looking for that, and trying to do anything I could to conjure that up. But, you know, the resume obviously couldn't stay okay anymore. I never went to class. I couldn't show up for anybody. I'm selling drugs. I can't trust anybody, right? I'm just living a huge lie. And again, the behaviors I developed led me to a point where I couldn't stop. I really couldn't stop. And, you know, OD'd one night, and the friends I was hanging out with just threw me in a cold shower and went to get Mexican food, which is not something I'd recommend doing if you have a friend who's ODing. And... you know, my parents came to pick me up from college, and they couldn't find me at all. And, you know, when I came out, I had just blown, like, a huge line of coke. And I come out, I'm like, hey, Mom. And I'm 35 pounds lighter. I haven't showered in days. I just look awful. And she knew. And so they drug tested me, and I passed that with flying colors. And suddenly I had a lot of explaining to do. And, you know, that summer I went home and I detoxed for 7 or 8 days in my parents' house, like any true high roller. And you know, it was awful. It was awful. You know, if you've ever seen the movie Trainspotting, I identify way too much with that. And I told myself, I will not let this happen again. I will not go back to this. I will not allow myself to get to this point again. And I said, all right, I can't use X, Y, and Z, but I can use A and B. And I had the blessing of relapsing before I even knew what that was. And basically what ended up happening was, started with a drink, it's turned into getting drunk, turned into smoking pot, turned into 6 weeks later, I'm doing the exact same thing again. And, you know, I was sent off to rehab completely against my will, with no desire to stay sober. I was furious I was there. I was 18 years old and got shipped off to Atlanta to a young adult program and tried to, like, BS my way out of that, but they saw through it and I really didn't have a choice. It was like I had $60 to my name and I'm in Atlanta, which I'm not that cool of a person in Atlanta. And so, you know, it was like, okay, I'll do this to get my parents off my back. And I guess the theme I'm trying to kind of build here is that AA works despite myself. It works despite myself. If you ask me how I've stayed sober for 6 years, my answer is I have no idea. I have no idea. And it's luck, really. But there's been suggestions that I was given very early on that I've maintained consistently over those 6 years. And as my sponsor put it, you know, and he said it all the time at meetings, you know, he'd say, my magic works for me. And, you know, it was very important when I came in for me to kind of get advice from a lot of different people and have an open mind towards it and just kind of do what people told me to do. Because, and the way the world works for me at least is, if you want what I have, do what I do. And that's what a lot of people who, when I came into the rooms, had time, had lives, had peace in their eyes, had confidence, smiled, had friends around them. I just saw what they were doing. And, you know, treatment, you know, it basically helped me to get separation, to understand what my relationship was to drugs and alcohol, right? Because if I'm going to be able to do anything in this program, I need to have access to my truth. And for me, that's really what the 12 steps are all about, is getting access to my truth. And I was able to kind of look back and really start to see that it hadn't been me running the show at all for several years. It was just alcoholism running rampant, and I was just sort of, you know, the victim of it in a way. And, you know, I did that for 90 days, and I had a plan. I was like, you know, my friends back in L.A., they've missed me a lot. And I have, like, this great plan to sell drugs next year. I'm going to go back and do that. And they said, no, you're not. And you're going to go to sober living. And I had no idea what that was. I just kind of thought it was a house I could come and do what I wanted. But despite me, it was a really hardcore halfway house. And I came in, and that's really where I like to say that my recovery began. And, you know, the place, they called me out on what I did. And there were rules, and I didn't get my way. And I was surrounded by a group of people who kind of gave me tough love in the sense that they would rather tell me the truth that they saw than tell me what I wanted to hear. And for the first time in my life, that started to become something that was really important and something that had value. And they just made me do service, right? And, you know, you went to two meetings a day at first, no phone, can't really talk to girls, can't go anywhere by yourself. And I had to start earning trust with them. And they'd catch me manipulating, and they'd try to point it out to me. And my ego and my pride and all of it would come out and reject it, deflect it, deny it, deny it. But they did it enough consistently. They just wouldn't stop until I was like, all right, fine, I agree with you. And they're like, all right, cool, move on. And I'm like, that's all I needed to say. But as time went on, I started to internalize what they were talking about. They pointed out to me that I'm a huge people pleaser. They pointed out to me that I'll sell out any value system I think I have to if it means getting what I want. They told me that, you know, I'm a manipulator even when I don't think I'm manipulating, which was a really hard one to wrap my head around. They just taught me how to do the deal. They made me go to meetings. They told me to go do the steps. They told me to get a sponsor, and I did, and that sponsor would pick me up and take me to go hang Christmas lights and just talk to me, and we would just hang up Christmas lights. You know, it was around the holidays, and we just hang them up and talk and go read the book. And, you know, he kind of taught me that this was a deal where the party was actually starting. And that's what he said, like, the first time we sat down. He was like, so you think the party's over, huh? I'm like, yeah, it is. He's like, why? I'm like, because I'm 18 and I can't use drugs anymore. What are you crazy? And he told me, I'm telling you, the party's just getting started. And I kind of wrote it off. But if you're new and you're here, the party is just getting started. And what's ended up happening is I did the steps with that sponsor. I went through the book line by line, page by page. Started to develop this idea of a higher power, which was something I rejected a lot, and did inventory, shared that inventory with someone, and despite myself, I started to gain access to this thing that I call my truth. And, you know, that was really the first year of sobriety, and if you're new, I'm so excited for you. I really am, because I wouldn't trade what happened my first year for anything else. It worked out perfectly. There were so many things that went wrong, but when I look back at just how it all came together, it was beautiful. It was magic, despite myself. It was magic. And, you know, what ended up happening is that I started to discover myself in the sense that I was able to start building a personality that was just me, that wasn't influenced by a ton of other people. I started to learn how to take right action. to build self-esteem, because at the end of the day, alcoholism centers in my mind, and I can't think myself into doing the right thing. I need to take the action, and then the thinking slowly starts to correct itself, and I need a psychic change. I need it. Otherwise, I don't have a fighting chance. And the way that I fundamentally have thought over time has evolved, but it started to change, and I try to do my best to keep it changing. It's just crazy how much I've changed. That anxiety that I used to deal with is kind of gone most of the time. Self-esteem stuff, it's like I love who I am today. Not in like an ego-driven sense, but like I think I'm awesome. And it's cool. It's totally cool. It's like I get to help a lot of other people today. I get to send out positive energy into the world today. I get to sponsor people and like just watch them go through the process and just kind of tell them what happened for me and let them have their own experience. I get to show up for work consistently and help other people and be of service and bring an attitude of service and an attitude and lifestyle that relies on me not getting too full of shit about myself, that I start to think I know stuff. And that pays off really well. And, you know, there's a lot of cash and prizes that you can have, and I've been able to just take what I learned doing in these rooms with you guys and people back in LA, and it's paid off like crazy, right? I mean, 80% of the program still for me is just showing up. Just showing up. If I show up and I hit the pillow sober tonight and I wake up the next day, I have a fighting chance. And I just got to show up, which can be so hard for me to do sometimes. But luckily, I have you guys giving me phone calls, sending me texts, inviting me to Facebook events. And having all of you is what really kind of keeps me moving. And, you know, on paper, it's like 6 years of sobriety. I've went back to undergrad. I had a 2.8 GPA. I got straight A's for 3 years, despite myself. Got to have really cool relationships with girls and, like, grow a lot from those, even the ones that didn't work out. Like, every relationship I've had in sobriety has been awesome. Awesome. Because it's been with such a quality person that I would have never had a chance with. Never had a chance. And, you know, I've got to build a host of friends around me in the program, out of the program, go travel, go see the world, explore different types of meditation and spirituality and learn from other people's experiences and go to tons of meetings. Tons of meetings. Because, you know, the sponsor I had said, you're going to go to meetings until you love going to them. And there's only two times you have to go, when you want to and when you don't want to. So that was pretty simple. And, you know, senior year I had an opportunity to move to New York, and I got into grad school out here, and I came out here for that. And what a great opportunity to just kind of rebuild a new fellowship here and live in a place where I didn't really know anybody. And 2 years later, I love it out here. I have a great life around me, and it's a huge function of having you guys showing up to meetings and having you guys to go to the diner with and having you guys to talk about what's going on with me. So I'm really glad to be here, and thank you very much for letting me share.
Welcome.
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 Welcome.